Welcome to Pep and Chad with Megan Nash, a co-production with the Creative City Center in Regina, Saskatchewan. Hello, I'm Megan, and this is the podcast where I call up friends, and we talk about touring, we talk about snacks, and anything, everything in between. Okay, this is the last episode of this season, folks. Can you believe it or not? This is the season finale, 16 episodes. I have Marion Donnelly at the Creative City Center to thank for encouraging me to actually create a podcast, and it has been so much fun to work with Marion and Emma at the Creative City Center to make this podcast happen. I also need to give a big heartfelt thank you to Logan Amon for engineering the podcast, and also to my sweet pup, Shiloh Nash, who every now and then you get to hear him bark as he is the censor, and he's also my best friend. Okay, so let's party. This is the last episode. This is the season finale. It felt very appropriate to call up the band that you've been listening to this entire season. This song? The one you're listening to right now? Yes. This is Burger Boy by The Garys, one of my favorite bands. And so today, I'm talking to not one, not two, but three members of the Garys in this special season finale. We talk about pig spleens. We talk about coffins. We talk about skunk pelts. Maybe it gets a little grim, but it's a lot of fun, so let's get right to it. Okay, today's guests are Lenore, Julie, and Erica from the Garys. Okay, I am so excited. Season finale, 16 episodes, and the entire time, dear listener, you got to listen to a song by one of my favorite bands, The Garys, and they are joining me here today. All three members of The Garys are joining me today. Garys, thank you so much for being on the Pep and Chad podcast.
Thanks for having us, Megan.
Yeah. Thank you.
Even though you've been on every episode with your song Burger Boy, and I love it so much, the ding ding ding. Marion Donnelly from the Creative City Center said it reminded her of a small town hockey rink, and that, like, I don't know, she just like that part of the song just works so well for like the intro and the outro. So thank you so much for letting me use that the tune and letting it be a part of this this baby's first podcast over here.
Yeah, well, congrats on your first season. I don't know if you're continuing or not, but congrats on the success you've had this year.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much. I don't want to give too much away, but I'll just say I don't know. How's that for a response? You've come up on the podcast, not just your music, but with conversation with other guests too. One that comes to mind right off the bat here is Dana Beeler. I was talking to Dana Beeler about you because this was weird to admit, but the first time I saw you play was in London, UK.
Oh yeah, at the Old Blue Last.
Yeah, that I remember. Like, I had the night off. I was just there to enjoy music. I feel like maybe I had a few too many beers, but I just, like, I remember just being so excited to finally get to see you play live. And it's weird that I didn't see you at Gateway or something beforehand. Like, it was bizarre. It was a surreal experience to be on the other side of the world and being like, now I'm in London and now I get to see the Garys play. What was that experience like for you? Because I loved that show. Did you love that show?
Yeah, I think it was good. I remember the drum kit, the house kit. I heard a lot of horror stories about backline in Europe or in the United Kingdom. And I'd say for the few shows we did play, they were pretty true. Like, just like really great sound techs and really bad backline. Like, I'm sure there's exceptions to all that. But the kit that was there was like a really cool, like, retro 60s kind. I felt like I was Ringo Starr. I was just really happy with, like, it just looked like a timepiece, you know, but not a crappy one. So I was happy about that. I remember that. That's the biggest thing I remember from that show. And we also sold a fair bit of merch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Erica, go ahead.
We were playing with some friends of yours, I think, Hello Delaware, and correct me if I'm wrong, Julie and Lenore, Honey Lung? from the UK.
Yeah.
That was like, yeah, that felt like a, for me at least, it felt like a big deal playing there. You know, we were, that's like a pretty important venue in London. And I think I recall the load-in being kind of difficult because it was all upstairs. But yeah, it just felt really cool to be playing at like such an interesting venue and such a unique place too. So
yeah, and we did a silly thing on that tour, that little UK tour we did, because Eric and I had to arrange guitar cases before we flew over.
Oh, so yeah.
both of us needed a flight case, and for whatever reason, I think through the like Facebook gear exchange, I got my hands on like this double-decker steel. It's not even really a guitar case. It's just like a gun case or something probably. And it was like 45 pounds empty, but we could put both of our guitars into it. And so in our minds, we're like, this is maybe great. We'll save on, you know, luggage fees. We'll only have to kind of ship one item and it'll just be good. But it was just so freaking heavy to the haul around the United Kingdom. And we were traveling by train.
Like the whole kingdom. We were the whole kingdom.
traveling by train with that thing was just like such a nightmare. And then like all of the Airbnbs we stayed at, it seems like all of them were on like 3-story walk-ups. So we, and like no elevators or whatever. So we just had to, it was just such a, like it was just, like, it was an albatross around our neck for that whole tour to just carry this massive coffin that weighed and, like, I don't know. When it was loaded up, I feel like it weighed like 70 pounds or something.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. And getting it like onto and off of escalators was also a very hairy, stressful thing that it'd be like whoever was in charge of the case, everyone else like made space for them and like didn't bother them with anything. And like, it was like always like I'm going in type thing. It was like very stressful. I don't think we'd ever do that again. No. Julie sold it.
I sold it for sure. I didn't keep it around. But I feel like our guitars were like pretty secure in there because it was so heavy. It was so heavy duty, but it was overkill. I don't know if it was worth it for the security.
I wanted to ask you if that tour, if you had rented a van to do those dates and if you were driving in the UK or if you were using public transit, but you were taking that case on public transit. And so when you say you wouldn't do it next time, do you mean like, would you rent a van? Would you drive on the other side?
I don't know. I think the hardest part about the public transit thing was that case. Oh, yeah. So like, I think if we were to do it again, we'd probably be like, oh, this is easy because we have like regular guitar cases instead of just like coffin to drag with us. I think we talked about renting a van or something. And then we just
or
didn't.
Like hiring a driver maybe.
And then as soon as we got there, we were like, oh my god, thank god we didn't. But I don't know. Maybe, what did you do? Have you driven around there?
I've driven a lot in Germany by myself, but they're driving on the same side of the road that we are. Every time I've been to the UK, I've always done public transit. And when you're talking about going on public transit with your guitar case, I just have this like, I get so anxious thinking about that because you know, when you got your backpack and you got your bag of merch and you got your guitar and you're trying to take up as little space as possible because you want to be, you know, polite and considerate, but you just have all this gear with you. It's just so difficult to take public transit with a lot of gear, I have found. But I'm also like, this is where I feel like I don't have the same kind of like as much experience with public transit, period. You know, like I think the first time I took like a bus was probably when I was 18, 19, living in Halifax, like as far as public transit goes. So I'm just not very savvy. And I've definitely been that person that has the backpack on and is like moving from side to side unknowingly, like being in someone else's face. Yeah. So whenever I see somebody being that awkward on the train, my heart goes out to them. I'm like, oh no, I know what that's like. I've been you, but I've been so nervous to drive in the UK.
Like I love driving on the Autobahn by myself. I'm fine with that. That's okay. I'll go like 170 down the highway. It's legal there, dear listener. It's legal there. And I'm having the time of my life listening to like Conan O'Brien podcast or something. But like the idea of driving in the UK, I am terrified.
I've done a bit of like scooting around on the left side of the road in Bali before, not as a musician, but just, you know, tourist or whatever. And, I made some like really horrible, stupid mistakes driving, you know, like, so it's not as easy as just like, oh, just go to the left, especially when you're when you're at intersections and stuff and like you're in multiple lanes, like I just end up doing weird things and people are like, you're an idiot, you know? So that's probably what would happen if we drove in England.
I feel like if I was driving in England too, I'd be really stressed about where to park, because it seemed like people just have very different parking rules there. Like they're up on the curb, you know, and it's on the other side of the road. So I don't think I understand that etiquette well enough to even begin, you know?
Yeah, that makes me feel stressed out right now. Parking in London.
Yeah, that stresses me out too. And actually, when you mentioned the load in for your gig at, I'm sorry, what was the name of the venue again?
Old Blue Last.
I remember that load in because I was with Hello Delaware. Like I was with them during that time because we had played, I believe, we had played Focus Wales, and then we were playing Great Escape, and just by chance, we both got in the same festival. So I was just hanging out with them in London in those days in between. And so I remember helping them load in and, just all the stairs and being grateful that we weren't trying to find any place to park. It's so, finding places to park. I really, you know, I dream of a world where there is like a musician loading zone and there's always a parking spot for the band. It doesn't make sense that's something that isn't just happening. Yeah.
Right. I think if I did rent a van or drive a van in London or in the UK, I'd probably never park it, and I would just drive in circles until it just petered out, and then came to a slow rolling stop, and wherever it stopped would be like where I ended, and I'd just be like, this is it, you know, to avoid parking.
You just play the show there.
Yep. That's what we'll do next time.
Yeah,
secret show wherever we got as a guest.
I get stressed out just parking in like Calgary for load-ins, so like trying to do it in a big city like London, I think
remember at the Legion, which is like surrounded by train tracks and people, you know. I remember we had to load in really fast. I don't know, it was like you park the car and then you drop us off here, and it was all stressful. We felt like we were like from small town, you know, because we're like can't hack it in Calgary parking. And then Erica went to go find parking spot in like a pay park thing a couple blocks away or something, where you pay like $20 for the night or something. And then she couldn't find her way back to the Legion, and then she called us. And we're like, where are you? And she's like, I don't know.
That did happen.
It was the first time we played in Calgary, I'm pretty sure. Like, now we're just like, you know, we know where to go and whatever. But the first time, we were like, what do you see around you? Describe where you are.
You know,
found her. Here she is.
We found her. That stresses me out. Like when I just said I dream of this world where we have, you know, musician loading zones, and then you talk about loading in and there's like train tracks, like just danger around, you know. And you have to do it really fast and then you get lost. It's like, oh, and then you have to go and do your best up on stage after all that adrenaline from just parking. Yeah. Oh dear. So in Canada, you're driving your own van, Vanny Lennox.
That's right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Do you have any memorable Vanny Lennox tales?
Vanny Lennox is she's like one of the best things that ever happened to our band, I think.
Yeah. She's been really good to us, and
I miss her because she's been parked, you know, since the pandemic. Actually, since before the pandemic, because she's usually parked for a good chunk of the winter, and we just played her when we sort of need to use her. So I think the last time we used her was January of 2020 for a show in Calgary. But yeah, I think when I think of being in Van Halenics, it's just the usually because we're on the way to a show, which is exciting, and it's like a fun road trip with my sisters, in addition to just being like a cool musical thing we're getting to go, you know, perform at and experience. And we have this like growing collection of cassette tapes in there, so we're always just listening to fun music, and sometimes there's snacks. Yeah, it's just a good time, and we'll, you know, switch turns driving and navigating and sleeping the way you should on a good road trip, and yeah, it's just it's so much fun.
I remember the time, Julie, that you ripped the horn off them.
Oh yeah.
sorry, you ripped the what off?
The horn, like
off the steering wheel.
Yeah.
For no reason, like she was fine.
It was, like, I don't remember where we were, but I was driving some long haul thing, and I was just like fiddling with the steering wheel because I was bored as I was driving, and I had my finger like underneath the like horn mechanism, and I just pulled, and the entire horn mechanism just popped out.
So funny.
And like, I was just like, what the hell just happened? Like the horn's in my hand. And for the rest of that trip, we didn't have a horn, and it was just like, it wasn't connected anymore. It didn't work. But
we
like
to honk the horn a lot.
sometimes we need to. I think Erica like saved our life one time honking the horn in that thing. Because a lady
drinking a milkshake
and
really steering into my lane. And yeah, that horn. And in between us and like a big gravel truck.
Oh,
and so
no.
She was just squeezing me out like on the freeway. And so that horn really saved our lives that day.
That was pretty funny though. Because we were like, is that lady drinking a milkshake? What the hell?
Yeah.
She almost killed us.
We hit a skunk once in the van.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that was sad.
It's like that was sad. We felt so bad, and our van.
We were
skunky.
Driving to the Last Chance Saloon because we were gonna sleep there, and we just hit a skunk on the way, and we felt so bad about it. So Lenore, you hooked us up with a skunk skin. Hey,
yeah, we've got a skunk pelt in there now as like a memory in memory of this, not of the actual skunk, because we don't know where, you know, we didn't go back for him, but we felt bad about it. And so I had friends in LaRange, and they have like, you know, Robertson's Trading Post, where they have like, you know, hides, I guess, and furs of all kinds. And so I bought it to put it in the van as a memoriam. And Julie was like, great, now there's two dead skunks on our hands.
Oh, no.
So I don't know if I really made it better.
I
kind of just
know.
Doubled it. Doubled the...
It looks cool in there, though.
The death, yeah. It does look cool.
That's the quote. I don't know. I think I just doubled the death.
I did. She's like, I don't think this works.
It doesn't.
You canceled it out.
You didn't cancel it out, no.
Oh, my goodness.
I remember at Gateway, because it's always like 400-kilometer winds, we opened up the doors, we were packing to leave on like the super hangover Sunday morning or whatever, and the like 400 kilometer wind just gusted right through the van, and the skunk pelt went flying out like really far away, and we had to run and get it.
Oh gosh. Okay, I also love that visual. Sorry, I'm just cracking up over here. Or, you know, you've given me so many wonderful visuals today already, you know, hauling a coffin around the UK, being at Gateway and having a skunk pelt just like flying out of your tour van. I really appreciate that. So this is a terrible segue after we've talked about so much death, but in Canada, when you're in Van Halenics, what's your go-to snack? sorry, I'm like getting the giggles over here. I appreciate your stories so much.
I'm big on like the drinks.
I was gonna say the first thing that came to mind is actually kombucha.
Yeah.
Mm. I I think Lenore or maybe Erica started this. That was like a deliberate thing when we go on tours. You know, anytime you travel, sometimes your, you know, usual bathroom, your regularity can get interrupted because you're just in strange places and sleeping at weird times and eating weird foods. And so to combat that and just to have like better, you know, gut health when you're touring, kombucha, I think, is a good thing to have. So a lot of our trips start with just because it's sort of on the way between my house and most of the highways we take out of Saskatoon, is to stop at Earthbound Bakery in Saskatoon. And then there's a Dad's Organic Grocery is next to it. So we would get like some good pastries from Earthbound, like some pain au chocolat. It's what I think something Lenore usually grabs if they have it. And then like some kombuchas from the organic foods place.
There's also Swadesh Market, which is just across the street. Mm-hmm. And they have veggie samosas for like a buck each. So sometimes we'll run over there and get like a little baggie of samosas. Super good as well. Mm-hmm.
And Julie, you often will like pack us like a nice Tupperware of a loaf you've made or something that we can eat on the road, which is probably my favorite.
It's almost always banana loaf because I just always have bad bananas in my freezer. But banana bread travels pretty well, I think. It's basically like a muffin, but you just, it's less scooping. So it's easier to bake.
Julie's banana loaf recipe is one that, like, if you get it, you're just going to forget all any other recipes you had before. And just, the buck stops there.
It's pretty good. Mm-hmm. It's been thoroughly tested, I'm not going to lie.
And whenever we go to Julie's house to jam, she often has a loaf of some kind on the counter. She'll give us a taster of it.
Good
pastries.
I'm curious if you would ever maybe share that banana bread loaf with me.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not a guarded recipe by any means. I've sent it to many folks who've asked for it. So if you need a good banana bread, or if you prefer banana loaf, whatever you like to call it, I can definitely send it to you, for sure.
Well, because I have been on the search for a perfect banana bread recipe. And I am still currently seeking, so maybe this is like...
Okay.
Yeah. You know, this could be the universe just like really aligning some stars for me, because I have been searching, so this is exciting for me.
I'll send it your way, and you can let me know how it holds up. I've gotten good feedback so far from people I've shared it with, but...
Great in a rectangular Tupperware to take on the road.
Yeah.
Pre-cut, pre-sliced.
You should pre-slice it because you don't usually travel with like a butter knife or any knife typically.
So when you're heading out east, are there any regional snacks in Eastern Canada that you are excited for when you are going out to say the Maritimes or Central Canada?
We've been probably most concentrated in like Montreal area. So we've actually yet to be, we've had a couple opportunities to go to Newfoundland, but it was quashed by a pandemic, but hopefully in the future that will happen. But I think instantly of Montreal.
Yes.
Snakes.
The first time we were there, it was a really weird circumstance, kind of fell into our lap, and we were in Montreal for a total of like 11 hours. Including sleeping.
Yeah. And two shows or something.
Yeah, it was really kind of crazy. But the second time we were there was great. We had lots of time to like tour around a little bit, see the city, and like sort of eat our way around. And I think we ate a lot of the like famous foods you associate with Montreal. Like we had a steamy, like a hot dog. And we had like Schwartz's Deli, some smoked meat sandwiches. And what else did we have? We had poutine, of course.
Mm-hmm. Dispatch Coffee, I remember, was really yummy.
Mm-hmm. We went to, which of the bagel places did we go to? I forget.
St. Voiteur, if I'm saying it right. Probably not saying it right.
Yes, I think that's the one we went to.
What's your go-to bagel? Is it rosemary rock salt? Because I just want to know if anyone else has the same favorite bagel. Oh, I love Rosemary Rock Salt. Sorry, I did not mean to interrupt
really
you.
Bagels are really overrated, so don't ask me. Yeah. I'll let Julie and Erica take this one.
That's fair. She said that to us in our group chat like a week ago, that bagels are overrated, so...
It comes up frequently.
She's not just fronting for this podcast. She really thinks they're overrated. Yeah.
We can talk about it if you want, but I don't want to ruin the podcast.
Erica, what's your favorite bagel?
I think I enjoy just like a regular sesame bagel, or maybe poppy seed. I think one of those would be one of my faves. But I like all bagels. I'm just a big carb lover, so yeah.
You know what I really like, and I think it's underrated, I really like a cinnamon raisin bagel.
Huh.
It's, you know, it's a little sweeter, I think, than many bagel types. Maybe a little more desserty, but I enjoy a cinnamon raisin bagel quite a bit.
I respect that answer. It did surprise me. I wasn't expecting a sweet. I was, yeah, I think that's, but that's maybe a reflection of my own bagel bias. You know, I think savory when I'm thinking... bagels, and that does not need to be the case. It certainly does not need to be the case. Did you play Sappy Fest in New Brunswick?
No, we've never been.
What? Okay, this is why I've got my wires crossed, because I thought that Matt Williams took a photo of you at Sappy Fest.
In our dreams, I think he did. But no, maybe someday. Not yet.
Yeah. We need to take a quick break, and we're coming right back. You've been listening to Pep and Ched with Meg and Nash. Hey, that's me. And today I'm chatting with the Garys. And yeah, you could say I'm pretty happy that this is happening, because I think they're rad. All right, let's get right back to that conversation. I could not play the Family Pig Spleen event. Now, usually every year, I play at the Pig Spleen weather forecast party that it is my extended family. And for the listener who's not familiar with a pig spleen weather forecast prediction, where
everyone
have you
should
been
know.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Way to be right. Sleeping on that, okay, get with it. No, I'm joking, but what you do is you butcher a pig. And to predict the weather from the area that pig was from, you then examine the spleen, and you can tell different parts of the weather by different clumps of fat and the texture, and it's quite intense, and I'm gonna go on the record and say fairly accurate.
I'd say so.
So when I was in Germany the one year, I was so excited that my extended family booked the Garys to play the pig spleen party. And I don't know if I've ever actually talked to all of you about that. What was that experience like for you? And was it as bizarre as you, as someone listening at home might think it would be? Or is it normal? Because to me, it's normal. That's my family. This is how I grew up. This is how I am. This is why I am the way I am.
It was amazing. That was such a fun Yay. Show. But something that I really seem to recall was not really knowing that it was going to be about prognosticating until fairly long after we booked the show. And so it seemed like maybe some crucial information had been left out of the initial email to book us. And then it was slowly revealed. And I think I had a conversation with you, Megan, about how you kind of explained it once we knew what was happening, and you were like, it's okay, it's super witchy, it's really fun, you're gonna love it. So that's mostly what I remember from that.
Yeah, we had a great time. It was really, I remember we drove home that night because it wasn't like a super late gig. You know, if you go to Regina, you usually stay the night because you're playing until after midnight or something. So we drove home, and I remember on the drive home, we were like, well, that was the weirdest show we've ever played. But it was awesome.
Yeah.
I remember, too, there was, like, a funny mix of people. Because there was people there who were like, where's Megan? You know? Or people, they were like, well, I guess you're okay. You're not Megan, but you're okay. And then there was, like, a few kind of teenage people in the back wearing Garys t-shirts. And they were like, what's this gig, man? And yeah, it was like kind of like a funny mix of like people there. And also, is it always at the Artesian?
No, sometimes it's in a farm near Gull Lake. Like, it can be like, sometimes it's a house show. I think a couple years they've actually rented the Artesian for it. But usually it's just happening in someone's living room.
Oh, cool. I really liked it because, you know, we were behind curtains and then they would, you know, be talking and stuff. And then they would be like, and now the Garys, we were sort of this sort of like, kind of like, you know, this old 50s Vegas thing where like the stage just kind of turns around and then there's the band for a song and then they disappear kind of thing. So they're doing that with the curtains and it just felt like really like, I don't know, like sideshow style. And it was awesome. I really liked it. It felt like the closest thing we'd ever get to like a Ned Sullivan gig or something. And also the merch they had there was like pretty lit. Like, they had like sunglasses, which I actually was wearing today. Because they're cool. They just say Pig Spleen on the side.
Pigspleen.ca.
Right. Yeah, of course. But they've got, like, they have all kinds of really cool merch.
I remember they had bowls of chips just scattered about the room, and I thought that was a nice touch. I mean, maybe this... You know, after COVID, maybe this isn't a thing people want anymore, but I just think there should be just more random snacks. You know, at all events.
Agreed.
They also, you know, they barbecue the spleen and cut it up for people. But unfortunately, there was a problem that night. The propane wasn't working or something. You couldn't get the barbecue going. So they weren't able to, like, barbecue the spleen. So they offered just, like, raw spleen to people. But most people were like, yeah, I'm fine. People just kind of slunk out the back door as soon as they were like, okay, it's not barbecued anymore, it's raw. Like, so I think a couple people had a bite or two, but yeah, it was the year the spleen was raw. It was the year that we played.
The year of the raw spleen.
I think, though, if you ever were in Germany again, or touring, or unavailable for whatever reason, I think we would probably jump at the Pig Spleen Party in a second to play it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, I dream of the day where we both play it. So it's like, you know, we both get to, especially if it's at the Artesian, a larger venue, we just both get to be, all of us get to be a part of the Pig Spleen Party. Because I do feel like, I was going to ask you, if you tried the spleen, and just to clarify, there is the spleen that is the one that is mapped out and measured and assessed, whatever the right terminology is, and then they barbecue a separate spleen, so it's not the one that's been out for hours and has been examined and traced and mapped and all that kind of stuff. So but it is a bit of an experience to actually to eat that spleen too. But I was curious if because nobody had mentioned the smell of it already, so I thought maybe it wasn't cooked, because that's a bit of a distinct odor. So
yeah, no.
Well one day I dream of the day where we will all get to
spleen on me.
Yeah. Yeah, we should cover that song.
Sure. Yeah, let's do a set
spleen
together.
On me.
Yeah. Oh my god, we can have like 14 part harmonies and
No, I love that so much. And I was pretty jealous actually that I wasn't able to be there at the show, getting to hear you play and getting to be with that part of my extended family that I just adore. And like, they don't think, like, they would never say that the pig spleen stuff is witchy, but it's pretty witchy. Like,
it is, yeah.
They were really welcoming to us and really, really nice.
Cool.
So yeah, it was awesome.
Cool.
I remember too just being kind of like struck by how everyone in the audience was like so into it too. Like, everyone believes it and trusts this and stuff too. And like you said, it is accurate. But just a quote that I think about a lot was this older woman who put up her hand and she just asked, "What about the wind?" And so she was talking about like the wind prediction. And so I think that's a bit of a testament to how accurate the pig spleen prognostication really is.
Yeah. And I remember there was like, you know, question period or whatever. and people were like, you know, like, my daughter's getting married on June 12th. What's going to be like then? Like, people weren't just, like, there to, like, have drinks and laugh. They were, like, taking notes.
They're, like, planning their summer around this
picture. And so that is really wonderful, you know? Yeah. So, like, ever since that event for me, like, I always make sure, like, when I see, like, oh, they've, like, new spleen out, I'll read it, you know? And I'll be like, cool.
Yeah, it really is so cool. And I just love, I love, like, that sense of community that it does create too, and that how many folks are involved with it now, and how Gus, the original Pig Spleen fellow, how much they honor him, and how much it's in his memory. So, like, that's really beautiful. And yeah, well, I'm really glad to hear that you had a great experience with the Pig Spleen. And if anybody is listening from my extended family, I say thank you for listening, and also book us, you know, when it's safe to. Like, wouldn't it be wonderful if by the end of 2021 we could all get together for a Pig Spleen party? I'm talking being up on stage together. I'm talking bowls of chips. I'm talking barbecued spleen and little toothpicks for everybody. I'm talking glasses, sunglasses. I'm talking Pig Spleen swag for all. Wouldn't that be beautiful?
Like a dream.
Mm-hmm. it really does. And something
we should help put out tickets for the next one, and just people would, like, get people to prepay for them now. We'll be like, we don't know when it's gonna be, but get your ticket. And we'll just mention everything you just said, and we'll sell tickets now.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it would have to be a couple nights. I think we would sell it out. I think after all the publicity we're giving it right now, I think it would be really great. It could be a tour, you know. My cousin Jeff, who reads, he's just does a great job, and I just love it so much. So this just made my day to hear about your experience with it, and that it was positive. So that's great. I appreciate that. Another weird segue, I guess. Well, pig spleen is edible, but it's still maybe not the most enticing. But when you were over in the UK, was there, like, a certain snack or anything new that you got to experience there? 'Cause you were over there, you were there during the royal wedding as well. Did you see?
That's why we were there.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you see? I have a regret. I'm sorry. I answered a question, or asked you a question rather, and now I'm just talking. But I will. I want to get back to the question. But just one moment. I have to tell you, one of my biggest regrets with my touring life so far is not buying the wedding cake at the grocery store that was made and designed for that royal wedding. It was £20. That is expensive, but cake is awesome. And I think about that cake a lot. I should have bought it. Did you buy any, like, royal family wedding themed snacks or any kind of new snacks?
No, we didn't really. I don't want to squash your bubble, but at that point in the tour, when the royal wedding was actually happening, we were in Wales at that point, and I really got the impression that people in Wales just, like, did not give a sniff for the royal wedding, and they were very indifferent to it. And we had, like, a bit of time before our show, so we went to a pub to, like, just see the, you know, see all the festivities on television at, like, I don't know, 11 in the morning or sometime pretty early in the day. And, like, there was one dude in the pub, and, like, nobody was there. I think they had some decorations up, but, like, nobody was celebrating. Nobody cared about it. And we were just like, oh, I guess Welsh people just, like, don't really, they're not really into the royals apparently. So yeah, we kind of missed maybe some of the most excited people.
We did eat some really great doona.
Oh yeah.
Tonnerre.
Yeah.
I know, what we call it, doona.
I think that's from,
they call it doona in Germany.
Right. Yeah, I was gonna say our German cousins have
But I'm pretty sure we called it doona the whole time too.
We did have good tonnerre. Yeah. In London, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or like we also had, are they called pasties?
Yeah, the Cornish pasties, right?
Yeah. Those are good like travel food if you're carrying a coffin on a train.
It was like a hand pie kind of, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, those were good.
We ate lots of those.
I remember we had like some pretty weird chip flavors. I think this was on that trip. Or I should say crisps, like potato chips. Because they just have exotic to us assortment of chip flavors in like any convenience store in the United Kingdom. Instead of just having like, I don't know. Well, here you just see like ketchup and barbecue and dill pickle, but there it's like prawns and like lamb and mint and just these like bizarre sounding combinations that, I don't know if we tried too many of them, but I have a lot of fun in like convenience stores when we travel, just being like, what the hell is that? And then like, we'll buy a handful of things and like, it's hit or miss for sure. Sometimes you're like, this is weird, I would never buy it again. Sometimes you're like, this is amazing, why don't we have this in Canada? But it's always fun, it's always an adventure.
Julie likes to like throw stuff around and the clerk is sometimes removes her from the store. It's only sometimes.
I get excited in there.
I love going to convenience stores in other countries as well, and I also really love drug stores. But when I say drug stores, I'm not saying the right thing, I don't think, because there's like an apothecary and some, like in parts of Germany, I'm trying to think, it's like not like Shoppers Drug Mart where it's just like there's your pills and your products, like sometimes they're separate. So what I mean is like what I think of a drugstore, like the Shoppers Drug Marts of the world. I love going there. And before I was a bit more conscious of what I'm putting on my face and stuff, I used to just buy like masks when I couldn't read what they were and try them out and be like, oh, I wonder what this is. You know, like a little, like, I don't know, 99-cent sheet mask or something from the drugstore. But I love going and seeing different products and, this is making me miss going to different countries so much. I miss traveling so much.
Yeah. I remember in London, I found, in a small grocery store, like they had kind of everything, but it's a convenience store sort of, they had, laundry detergent called Lenore. And I bought it and I still have it. I have like, this is a couple years ago, three. And I still have like maybe an inch and a half of it left, and I just like can't bring myself to use it because I don't want it to be gone. So well, it's just fair. There.
I like bringing home keepsakes that are practical, like that you can use every day too, and be like, oh yeah, I traveled there once. Like my nail clippers are from Germany. They're not special. they're not fancy. They're just like I get to use them, and I go, oh yeah, I went somewhere once. And I've been really grateful for those, you know, nail clippers or coffee mugs or whatever I've maybe picked up on the road. Oh, I got a pair of socks in Wales. And I love that. I think when I travel again, when it's safe to, I want to get more socks from places because that's a nice little pick-me-up every morning. Oh, yeah, like, I went to Wales
like
once.
With the location written on the sock?
Yeah, like very cheesy, very kitschy tourist socks. That's what I want. Because I'm not a very big, like, my socks need to be nice or anything like that. Like, no, I have very low sock standard, so they could be any kind of socks. So that's something I want to do, is I want to start collecting socks when we're allowed to travel again. Gosh, I have
Sounds
had
fun.
Too much time to think, just sitting here in the middle of nowhere just thinking about what it's going to be like to return. Something that I have been thinking a lot about actually is when we can tour again, when we are creating venues and creating spaces and encouraging people to come gather and watch us perform music and listen to us perform music, how to make those spaces more positive for everybody to attend and to perform at as well. So I'm curious if anybody would like to speak about that, about creating a safer, a more positive, safer space with regards to the Saskatchewan music scene and within our own bubbles as bands when we are touring to different parts of the world as well. If anybody would like to share their thoughts on that.
I think one thing that we do that I really like, and we probably all do, is if you get, anytime we get offered a show or a gig somewhere, we ask questions about who else is going to be on the bill beforehand, you know? Because it's not just about, like, how much you're getting paid or whatever. It's, like, what kind of environment is it going to be? And it extends beyond money. And I think that's a good practice for people to think about when they say, oh, you'll be playing with Megan Nash and whoever else. And, you know, it's like sometimes the people on the bill that you're going to be sharing the stage with are people who've, like, committed sexual assault sometimes, you know? And sometimes the people you're playing with are good people who don't do that kind of thing. And you can choose whether you want to be a part of that or whether you don't. And I think that's a good opportunity to sort of, like, screen who you're, like, working with and working around. So I think that's something really important that bands can do. And I think that people in the audience, just like your typical attendee, to, you know, just because you're consuming the music doesn't mean you are absolved of social responsibility too, you know? Like, everybody who goes to these shows are ultimately supporting whoever's on stage. And you have to think about, it's about more than, there's a lot happening aside from music. There's more than that too, right? And I think that individuals have more responsibility than, sometimes we like to abandon individual responsibility. And I don't think we should do that.
I think one thing, this was an initiative Lenore had when we helped her. Lenore is basically the head organizer of the Manitou Boogaloo. She does the lion's share of the work in getting those events together. We've had two Manitou Boogaloos so far. And you know, if the spirits align, we'll have another one next year. But at the first Manitou Boogaloo, there was an incident where someone was there who was making a friend of ours feel unsafe. Because of past behavior of theirs. And then the second time around, I think partly from, you know, learned experience and learning what works well and what needs to be put in place for people to be safe, there was a Boogaloo support crew. And so there was a couple people identified by, you know, they were wearing like a uniform, a different colored t-shirt, basically to say, like, if you feel unsafe or if someone here is making you feel unsafe, or if you're not feeling well, if you're feeling sick or something, go talk to this person. This, you know, there's two people working the event who were part of the support crew. And it had to come out of the event budget, right? Like, they were paid because they had expertise in how to support people in crisis situations. And so they weren't just any random folks. They were, you know, people who were prepared and knowledgeable about how to do that kind of work. But I think that went a long way towards making the second version of that event safer and better. And I think that's a really, you know, great thing to plan for. I think when you're budgeting for an event, you're like, hey, we have to pay the artists, we have to pay the sound techs, we have to pay, you know, people at the merch table, whatever, all those folks. But it's like, who's there to help this be a safe space? And that should, you know, I think more often we should be thinking about that as a budget line, a line item for planning events. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that's a really good initiative that I would love to see it happening at more events, and those folks should be paid, you know, the same way you pay the MCs and whoever else you bring aboard in a bigger event like that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that goes too with, like, a lot of venues. Like, some venues are obviously trying to become, like, a safer space and whatnot, but there's a lot that goes into that and a lot of training for, like, every staff person. And it's also, I know, the vibe that I get is that some venues kind of feel overwhelmed by the amount of work it takes to actually, like, be fully explicit in the fact that they're working towards this thing. And so I think that, like, having, like, the support crew and stuff was awesome, because that kind of took a bit of pressure off of the actual venue to do that. Not that they shouldn't be doing that, because they should, but I'm hoping that in the future there will be venues that are, like, a certified safe space in some capacity. I don't know what that looks like, but something that's, like, specifically there are people, like you said, Julie, who are paid because of their expertise, and you know, people actually feel safe around those people. It's not just like a check mark or like a sign on the wall saying like, this is a place where you're gonna not get talked to by people or feel uncomfortable. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's also important to like take responsibility where it's due, but also not take responsibility for people who commit assault or abuse, you know? Like it's, so we can't eliminate it, like us in this conversation, you know? We're never going to be able to figure out a way on our own to eliminate that from happening, but we can work on and control how we kind of come together in response to that kind of thing in order for us to prevent it from happening in the future or reduce it from happening as often in the future. So yeah, not to, just wanted to make sure that, you know, people who do this kind of stuff have to be held accountable. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean it's like a witch hunt for all these people and we just want to like scream and whatever, but it's like you have, there's consequences to every action in life, and some of the consequences are bigger than others. And around this topic, I think the consequences need to be equal to the action, and a lot of time it's swept under the rug, and that's why it's not okay, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I really I appreciate all of you and your perspective and your insight, and I just I think that, like, yeah, when we get back to promoting our own shows, that's the thing too. In Saskatchewan, I feel like artists, we do wear multiple hats a lot of times. We're our own managers, we're our own agents, we're our own promoters, we're our own labels. And so when we're thinking about how to create a more positive music community, I think a lot of what you just said could be applied. Everybody could take something from that. So thank you so much for sharing that with me, and for the sharing that with the listeners as well. We're at time. I hate that we're at time, but we're on a community radio schedule, and I've got to honor that. So I just want to say thank you so much, not only for chatting with me today, but again for letting us use your rad tune for the theme of this podcast. It means the world to me, and I know it's getting warm out. And it's getting closer to summer when Surf Manitou becomes like my nonstop playlist. I love that record so much.
Oh, thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks.
And I
we didn't.
So I just love to give a compliment and just see and just be quiet and see how people react.
Just let it hang.
Yeah.
Thanks.
This has been a dream. Thank you all so much.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks, Megan.
Thank you.
Thank you. How cool are the Garys, everybody? Wow. I love them so much. I'm not even going to try to play it cool. I love the Garys. I think you should go buy their music right now. TheGarys.bandcamp.com. Go give them some streams. Go give them some love. They're great people. They're a great band. Thank you, Lenore, Julie, and Erica. I thoroughly loved this conversation. You've been listening to Pep and Chad with Megan Nash, a co-production with the Creative City Center in Regina, Saskatchewan. The Creative City Center is supported by the Canada Council for the Arts, Sask Arts, the City of Regina, Canadian Heritage, and Creative Saskatchewan. This podcast is made possible because of the ongoing support of these agencies in spite of everything that's happening in this pandemic-fatigued world we live in. Special thank you to the Garys for the music! The Creative City Center is a community-based arts center that used to present around 200 events a year and gave a lot of emerging artists a home as they were starting out. Now they are home for a lot of online production, so check out creativecitycenter.ca to see what else they're cooking up. Besides all this pep and chat with me, Megan Nash. Support live music, folks, no matter what form it's served up in. Okay, take care. See you down the road, friends. And thank you so much for listening to season 1 of Pep and Chad with me. Bye-bye.